What's happening? Hour number three, Jay, Martin, and Ramon. Something I just mentioned to you, Mona. I was thinking about this, and I know it's not necessarily under a team's control because of whatever the union has negotiated and whatever's going on with the league. But if it's up to me and I'm Vrabel or John Robinson or anybody else across the NFL, I'm closing practice off to the media when it comes to rookie minicamp.
The first one, for sure.
Because I want to get my guys in the door and let them actually feel some degree of comfort before I've got guys out there who have to do a job.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need them reporting on how Malik Willis looks on May the 13th or May the 14th when this is the first time I've had him in the building. Yeah. This is the first time they stepped on the field. As you mentioned during the break, Moan, day one, you didn't know where the hell you were. You didn't know whether or not you thought you were about to get cut, probably, because you're like, I don't know where I'm supposed to stand. I don't know what they're asking of me. And then you've got media out there whose job it is to observe and analyze. And they don't know your story. They don't know that you spent the last week looking for a house. They don't know all of these things. I think it creates a scenario where it's hard for there to be anything that comes out that's all that relevant. Like, if it's just, I want my guys in the building for 3-4 practices before we open it to the media, even at minicamp. I don't know that the fans need that access that fast.
Yeah.
I think it would be better for all involved. Again, it's not their control. I'm sure it's league set and all this stuff.
Yeah.
I would shut it off to the media until at least 2 or 3 practices in. So at least they can get a foot in the water.
Yeah.
Before there's somebody scrutinizing how they look in a situation that they barely even understand.
And also, too, let me back them up. To be fair, I'm 100% with you on that one. Like, let them get their footing first. But to be fair, I've always kind of sided with the media, but, like, they got a job to do. And I know you feel that way, too. But in the point of introducing them into the Wolfpack, like, give them a day. Like I said, Travis, again, it's the one person that couldn't have this. Everybody's loving the kid from UCLA. Why? Because he ain't got much
rounder or whatever it was. Yeah.
He's fast. Mm-hmm. You root for him already. The one guy that you traded away was AJ. And the guy in his place, and you said this, when you saw it, you said what, Jay?
My reaction when you sent me that on Friday afternoon was, you're the one that can't get by with this. I felt I was disappointed, not in him. I was disappointed for him.
Yeah.
Because I knew what it was going to mean in the minds of some fans. Not all fans.
Not all.
Not all fans.
Yep.
But there's a segment that was going to see that, and that was going to be their conclusion.
Yep.
And this guy, unfortunately, has so much pressure because of who he's replacing and because of the situation that led to that guy leaving and how long it took to get a receiver of A.J. Brown's caliber here. Treylon Burks was the one guy where anything negative is going to be an excuse to overreact.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I feared when I saw it, was some people are going to run with this in a way they shouldn't. And by that, I mean fans, not media.
Yeah, not because, let me back up again. To be fair to them, it's their job to report. And it's the same sense. Also, you let those players either give an answer for what it was when given the opportunity, and Treylon didn't because he didn't speak to the media. The Titans didn't allow him to speak to the media. But that same guy that you put the headline out about, when he has a good game, he does something good in practice, bring that to the forefront too. And they will. But I just got to make that point, Jay, because Nashville got to start keeping the stars. AJ has came out and said time and time again, something about the fan base or the crowd or the stuff that he's gone through online from the fan base. Who was it? Delaney was another one that kind of said that. CJ2K was another one that kind of said that. So, not into coddling. Do not believe in that whatsoever as far as trying to protect the guy. But when it comes down to playing it fair on both sides of the fence, do that too.
Sure. Jason in Nashville. Jason, what's going on?
What's up, Jay?
Hey, good morning, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Hey, man, I know I'm going to sound like this was breaking news last night, and yeah, we should get over AJ being gone, like Buck Rising said, and you don't want to hear that stuff no more. Look, I'm sorry. That's not something you just get over when your team and the people that's making the decisions are retarded. Because you're putting a product, finally had what you've been looking for this whole time. You finally found that woman that's going to treat you right. But you want to go back and mess with these other women that are dogging you. I don't understand why people don't understand what's happening here. Like, this is from the top down. That was an ignorant move. And the fans have a right to be upset about that. Because, I mean, there was no way to justify that you paid some of these other players that you've been putting up with for years. And then you want to be cheap. John Robinson made a comment he was scared to pay him. You ain't scared to throw your money at other garbage players? But you're scared to throw it at somebody that's actually doing something for the...
Jason, we're going to cut you off because I don't think that's accurate. Shafe, have you ever heard? I don't think John Robinson ever said
that. Never said he was scared to pay him.
Matter of fact, in a lead up, he said he's going to be here.
Jason, it was just a necessary thing, Jason, the caller. It was this AJ thing was just business, and I get where he's saying. Like we preached about this like last year and before AJ and Jeff are going to come up. Like your stars got to be your guys. You want to keep them in house, and for the most part, you got Taylor, you got 22, 17 shores, you got Landry, you got Beyer. Like the same things I've said about that, the people have come back at us about it too. Like no, we got a bunch of in house guys.
Also, I would have asked him this, but. Who are the garbage players that they paid to keep here?
I guarantee you they feel a certain way about anybody that's not. I go Landry. I mean, they probably say something about him, and he hasn't been
trashed. That's my thing. It's like you got to keep your guys, and you were saying that, and that's right. Well, they are keeping
Who are the second contract guys? Well, they let go of both linebackers, right?
They paid Derek.
They paid Derek.
They paid Taylor.
They paid Taylor. Kevin.
Paid Kevin Beyer, made him highest paid safety in the league for a short time.
To draft your Corey. Guys.
They didn't pay Corey.
But then what would Corey do early on, though? He wasn't justified.
Well, no, he absolutely wasn't. And you brought in Julio, and you thought that was going to work, and it didn't. Now, if you want to talk about a garbage player that you paid in terms of production, that might be somebody you're talking about. But the idea of letting him go and being afraid, like, one, not accurate, and two,
I feel
you are paying a couple people.
I feel Jason some by saying you should have did everything you could have to make AJ work. I don't think John Robinson and Vrabel and Miss Amy Adams Strong are into the business of being against the cap so bad like the Saints.
Well, but here's the other part to that. But here's the other part of that in terms of fandom. That's going to be said about every single high-profile player you have. And you're not going to keep every high-profile player.
Can I bring this one to it, though, too? But AJ has been the one that you counted on and saying he's going to be a lifer. I think from the base... From the perception from John, from the comments from John Robinson and Vrabel, they promised that he was going to stay. But business got in the way of it. So what are you supposed to do in that case then? You can't, 25? Could they have done it, Jay? Yeah.
So we're looking at AJ in a certain way. I mean, what are Chiefs fans saying the same thing?
About Tyreek? I would venture so, yeah. I would think the fans are. I think people like us, people that look at it on the wise, he's got to go. I found another one. And also, is this too. You think Patrick's going to make another one?
Yeah, exactly right. And you don't feel that way about Tannehill. I think that's an excellent point. I also think which skill set is harder to replace, Tyreek's or AJ's?
Tyreek's.
Because it's speed you just don't see.
Mm-hmm.
Every catch he makes, even if it's a hook route,
yep,
could go 80.
This is the other part, too. This is where I think you got to back off Tannehill and hope he does the job. Because it's, honestly, it's his job to make Traylon a new him. I hate to say a new AJ, but it's on them, too, to be, hey, Tannehill, as much as y'all have trashed him, you got to go make Traylon. Just being completely honest behind it.
And Bobby Trees, too.
And Bobby Trees.
Bobby Trees is going to have a hand in that, too, I would say. Let's go to Jordan online for it. Jordan, what's up?
What's up, Jordan?
Morning, fellas.
Morning.
Second time, long time, all that good stuff. Don't worry, this is not going to be a subliminal men's medical clinic, advertisement. Regardless, as far as the reports on Traylon, I mean, I think that rightfully or wrongfully, this is going to be, and I think you guys kind of alluded to it, this is kind of going to be a preview of his, definitely his first year here in, you know, in Nashville, because, I mean, the pressure that he is going to be under from as far as the circumstances regarding acquiring him in the first round of the draft, I mean, I hope this is going to be good for him, but, I mean, do you guys think that this is just a preview of what we're going to see going forward? Hang up and listen.
Unfortunately, you're right.
Yeah.
We are going to call that out like crazy in the fall. I'm here to tell you.
Tell them,
Jay. We are going to annihilate callers that try to take Treylon Burks down because of his first month in the league. Or week two, A.J. Brown had X amount of yards. We're not going to listen to that. Ooh. I'm sorry. I fear Treylon Burks isn't going to make it because of just that kind of stuff. Our audience, Buck's audience, Blaine and Mickey's audience, 3HL's audience, Nashville is better than that.
Yeah.
You're smarter than that. He's not A.J. Brown. He doesn't want to be compared to A.J. Brown. He happens to be his direct replacement. And so we know that there's going to be some degree out there.
Yeah.
We're not going to stand for it on this show in the fall. We're going to give this young man a chance to be the first Treylon Burks, not continually say, well, boy, A.J. did this. I know there's going to be moments where we're going to look at A.J.'s numbers in Philly.
Yeah.
And we're going to look at it. We're going to have to analyze it. But just being pure slanderous, not giving him a chance, there's no call for that, and we're not going to allow it.
Let's be slow on that one.
Mike Tenier, next. He wrote a piece that you liked a whole lot called The Decline and Fall of Derrick Henry over at Football Outsiders. And he joins us next on The Zone.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Yeah, Mike Tenier's phone is unlisted in Nashville, just so you know.
The yellow pages or the white pages?
Just as, listen to the lyrics of this. I'm like, all Nashville's trying to get that so they can text. He knew when he wrote the piece what was going to happen.
I'll give his number out. 555-1234.
Let's go to the Mark Spann Real Estate Hotline. Ooh. We can just rename this segment. This is why we can't have nice things. Mike Tenier, Football Outsiders. Mike, good morning.
Hello, it's me, the Grinch who stole Christmas and the bearer of bad news.
Yeah, so the piece begins, Derrick Henry is toast. And some people were in their feelings about it. We could just say it that way. So explain before we get into it, detail, the broken missed tackle statistic.
Yeah, I'm doing research for Football Outsiders Almanac, and one of the things we look through is broken and missed tackle per attempt. Pretty simple. It's not like some super complicated, you know, thing with 27 variables. You take the number of broken tackles, the number of missed tackles, you pull them off of, you know, the tape, you watch them, and then you divide it by attempts. And you say, well, how often is this player breaking and missing, you know, getting defenders to miss tackles? And, you know, for several years, Derrick Henry was one of the leaders in the league in this statistic, which you would expect because he's Derrick Henry. And last year, and again, before the foot injury, during the regular part of last year when he, you know, he was getting a lot of yards, et cetera, we looked at the broken and missed tackle percentages, and he finishes near the bottom of the league in a group of running backs that includes guys like Saquon Barkley, who we know is toast, Ezekiel Elliott, who we all kind of chuckle at, and some dudes with names like Chuba Hubbard and Miles Gaskin that we know are not people that we would expect to be 1,000-yard rushers in 2022 or beyond.
So with that broken missed tackle stat, like with Derek, though, does he pick his spots when it comes to hitting the hole? Like, is that what he's doing now as far as the way he runs the ball? Like, what about the open space? Is he not a physical back? Is that what they're saying now?
It's saying now that sort of the wear and tear has gotten to him. And in the past, whether or not he's picking his spaces more now, in the past he didn't. It's a number that went from 23% of his tackles, 23% of his carries, he had a broken tackle. That was 2019. 2018, he was 21%. 2020 was down to 15%. Excuse me, 2021, my bad, is down to 9.6%. So it's half, less than half of what it was 2 years ago. So if he's picking his spots, it's not really being replaced by much. And another thing I looked at is other running backs who are down around 9%, 10% broken tackles. Because I was thinking, you know, maybe this is, you know, older backs, they figure it out more and, you know, they can find their holes and everything. The list of guys over the last 5 or 6 years who only broke that many percentage of tackles, it's a terrible list of guys. It's guys like Jordan Howard from the Chicago Bears who quickly faded, Alfred Morris for Washington who quickly faded, Frank Gore at the end of his career. I kept looking for a metric that said, no, this is just Derrick Henry evolving. This is a one-year blip. And every number you looked at said, no, this is a sign of the beginning of the end for Derrick Henry.
So it might, okay, let's accept that premise that you just said there. Let's say that this is nearing the end, or certainly we've seen peak Derrick Henry. We're on the way down now. That doesn't necessarily mean that it's over for the run attack for the Titans, because even when Derrick was out last year, they were successful running the football. They were the only top five rushing team in the league that made the playoffs, if I've got my stat right there. So what do you think about the offense that's being run right now for Tennessee as it relates to the future? If we're looking at a post-Derrick Henry era, maybe sooner than some people would be willing to admit right now, it is a system that has shown to work for other guys.
It is a system that worked. I know I worked for Donta Foreman a little bit last year, and you did have some success there. There's two worries. One, of course, is the other bit of bad news in Tennessee lately, which was the A.J. Brown trade. The idea is that, you know, you can still do this running and play action thing. It looks like you're not going to get a lot of help from your receiving core. Your receiving core has two new faces coming in that are supposed to do the things that you got from A.J. Brown and others in the past, one a rookie and one a veteran coming off ACL injuries. So the idea that, like, you know, we can still keep it up with this, that's not necessarily great news. The other bit of bad news is you bring in Hassan Haskins as your running back, and it's like, okay, you brought in another running back, you can do a thunder and lightning, you can do more of a rotation with Henry and other guys. He had one of the lowest broken and missed tackle percentages in college football. It was much lower than guys like Kenneth Walker and Breece Hall, guys who were going in the second round who are similar prospects, perhaps, to Haskins. So, you know, part of what the Titans tried to do was they tried to do play action, and they relied on those broken tackles and those big plays that are up from, you know, Derrick Henry doing that kind of beast mode type of thing. There's not a lot of evidence to suggest moving forward that the Titans can rely on either of those things.
So with that being said, the volume in which Derek gets the ball, what does that do for him? What does that do for this team? Is that just their method of pound Derek away until he gets the long breakaway? What is that looking like as far as the future for Derek Henry?
You know, it looks like, you know, another 1,200, 1,300-yard season probably, like Todd Gurley had later in his career when things started to struggle a little bit. For the Titans, it feels like, you're going to do that, and you're going to beat the Texans with it, and you'll beat the Jaguars with it, but you're going to have a hard time beating your better opponents with that. And I just want to share one more. This was not in the article. I went and I looked at the eight-man boxes. Okay, so, you know, the Titans, Derrick Henry faces a lot of eight-man boxes in the Titans offense. The idea is to bring them in, and not only will he be productive with the safety creeping in the line, but that'll help the passing game. And in 2019, Derrick Henry would face that 8 or 9 man box, and he'd average 4.7 yards per carry. Amazing. In 2020, he would hit that 8 or 9 man box, 4.6 yards per carry. Amazing. Last year, it was down to 4.1 yards per carry. So that's the difference between saying, screw it, bring 8 men in the box. He's going to gain a lot of yardage, and then we'll go over the top against you and beat you. And bring the 8-man box in, he's going to be struggling a little bit. He'll be very ordinary. It'll be third and long more. The opponents won't fear the play action as much. And again, it's hard to look at this and say this is going to be a real positive thing for the Tennessee Titans or for Derrick Henry.
So looking at that and looking at you know, Burks swap for AJ. He doesn't want to be compared to him. We're trying not to do that because it's not fair to him at all.
Right.
But do you look at the Tennessee Titans and see them as a, what, borderline contender, a Super Bowl contender? Yeah. Like, where are they this current iteration as we stand on May the 16th?
A playoff team by the grace of the Texans and the Jaguars. And the Colts sort of, you know, doing another Colts year where they're going to do the same thing and insert an old quarterback and go around 500. So all the Football Outsiders metrics says, you know, the AFC South and is going to be the weakest division in the NFL. And that's not unusual. That's often where we all land with this. And the Titans are going to be probably the best team in that division. So you're stuck in a situation. Last year, the Titans were good enough that they had that, and that led them the number one overall in the playoff seedings. That put them first overall. That put them in good position. This year, it might be a thing that puts them in third or fourth in the playoff seedings. A team that's trying to win with its defense, a team that's trying to grind out yards, and is going to be in that pack. So, and that's where, like, the Football Outsiders projections are leading to this team that goes 9 wins, 10 wins, gets into a playoff tournament with teams like the Bills and like this rebuilt Broncos team and the surging Chargers and the Bengals, and has a hard time competing at that level.
So what I've heard the stats. I don't know what it was. Was it over 350, 370 carries? 370s. Derek's hit that. We've seen other running backs hit that and not really bounce back. Does that factor into, you know, your breakdown and saying, you know, Derrick Henry's on his last leg or is in his last phase? How do we view that stat also?
Well, it puts the antenna up at Football Outsiders. Curse of 370 is a thing we did years ago. Titans fans remember DeMarco Murray had a situation like that. He had a big, huge carry year, and he kind of fell off quickly. The only running back in history that ever bounced back from 370 in a real way was Eric Dickerson. It's Eric Dickerson and everybody else. So when we're looking at Derrick Henry, and we're having an internal conversation at Football Outsiders, like, Henry looks like at Dickerson. He looks like the kind of guy who's going to scratch this off. You know, in 2019, he had a lot of carries, and he kind of scratched off and did great in 2020. Maybe he's going to be the historical anomaly. That's when you go looking for other statistics, and that's where we find this example of before the foot injury. We all know about the foot injury. There was evidence that he was starting to grind a little more than he had to. Now, you put the grinding and the foot injury and the loss of A.J. Brown, which is going to put even more pressure on the running game together, and that all factors into, again, the headline that Derrick Henry is toast, that he's facing an uphill battle, certainly.
What do you think of Treylon Burks? I know you did a lot of draft prep, and we read a lot of your stuff on air because, well, it's always fun to do. But when it comes to Burks in particular, how did you evaluate him?
If he was your slot, if he was your number three, I would love him. I was concerned about the 40 times and the speed, but he has an interesting combination of the ability to do that Debo stuff in the slot, or, you know, be a wildcat and take the handoff and do things. He can do that. He also has the capability along the sidelines. He can out jump defenders. He's taller than most defenders. He extends his arms. He can make plays like that. And, you know, if that was part of a nutritious breakfast that still had A.J. Brown and you're bringing in Woods and all, I'd be very, very excited about him. And I'm still happy. I think he's a heck of a player. But I think there's a lot of listeners in the same place. You replace a veteran who was playing at a high level with a rookie. You factor in the rookie growing pains, the increased expectations, and the increased targets he will get. He won't get to be Mr. Slot guy with someone else taking coverage off. And, you know, it's unfair to him, as you said, to expect a ton from him as a rookie, despite how promising he may be.
I have to ask you this because you break down and look at a lot of stuff, and it's been this ongoing social media thing for a very long time. Well, for the last 2 years, it seems that Derek's not your number one on your list when it comes down to best running backs in the league. I'd probably almost think you're going to choose Jonathan Taylor. Why are you going to do that?
You got me on tape. You got me on tape choosing Jonathan Taylor.
Yeah.
I was doing it about week 9 of last year. I might have done it like right before the injury or whatever. Henry was the best back in the NFL in 2020. He was the best back in the NFL in 2019. He was the biggest rising star in the NFL in 2018, and he was him and Taylor were the two best running backs in the NFL in 2021. Moving forward, I'm going to choose Jonathan Taylor as number one. Henry will probably still be somewhere between 2, 3, 4, and 5 in there if I start listing them all out. in a year or two, I have a feeling I'm going to be saying the same things about Jonathan Taylor that I'm saying about Derrick Henry, that they're going to, they kind of overused him in Indianapolis last year. They're going to rely on him a lot this year to sort of be the binky for Matt Ryan. And this is the nature of running backs. They get to a certain age, they get to a certain level of mileage, and they start tailing off. We keep looking for the one who's different. Adrian Peterson was different, and Eric Dickerson was different. And that's it. We go through history and we find there's not a lot that are different. The guys have these two or three or four phenomenal years and they start to tail off.
So I know this, it sounds callous, but the business of football is harsh. Do you think knowing where, and knowing the history and what you're saying, if you're the Titans, or do you anticipate the Titans are just going to run Derrick Henry ragged this year, give him as many carries as they possibly can, feeling like that they're on the same page with you, thinking the shelf life is pretty short, we better get everything we can out of him right now?
Yeah, that, and they're already paying him pretty substantially, and, you know, he's got a big money dollar figure in the book. So I don't know how callous that is. You know, I don't think Todd Downing sits there and thinks about stuff like that, Rabel thinks about things like that. They're looking at him and saying he is our best player. He is our best player. He is our established focal point of our offense, and that's why we're going to run him like this. But whatever the motivation is, it's probably going to turn into a lot of first and 10 and second down, you know, taking those handoffs and grinding in. And, you know, maybe that's another first down, and maybe it's third and two. Unfortunately, it might be third and eight more often. But, yeah, I see Haskins was like, yeah, they've got another plan. They're going to try and rotate things. But I think they're going to try and run the ball heavily. That's who the Titans have been, and that's kind of who the Titans have to be.
Anything jump out before we let you go? Anything jump out about the schedule? Any thoughts? I know they're just a bunch of games on a sheet of paper at this point in time, but a whole lot of ink and virtual ink has been spilled talking about them over the last few days.
I haven't looked, I'll be honest, at the Titans' schedule specifically. Like I said, we have penciled in that the AFC South has the easiest, is the easiest division, according to Football Outsiders. The Titans have the hardest schedule of all of them because you've got those first-place teams. So I haven't looked at their schedule significantly. Here in Philadelphia, we're looking at the Eagles' schedule, and they took the Eagles and they gave them the Lions and the Jaguars and the Texans and some other teams, and the Eagles fans are giddy about it. So I don't know if that makes that much of a difference for the Titans, but the fact remains you've got four wins that you should be able to put in your pocket right now. And after that, it's a matter of building on it if you're a Titans and building that playoff run.
Yeah, I actually wasn't specifically asking about the Titans. I was asking about the schedule in general, if anything had jumped out to you. One thing real quick, it looks like Green Bay, boy, they got on paper what should be an easy schedule.
Yeah.
Does that put more pressure on Aaron Rodgers without Devontae Adams? If they end up 10-7, for example, or even 11-6, is that possibly something that can ding Rodgers' legacy without Adams being there in that schedule and them not having a 13-3 or 13-4 or 14-3 season?
I think Rodgers' legacy is safe. I think we all know he's an all-time great. He's kind of a pain in the butt, and that's going to change. But 11-6 would be a disaster to Packers fans. It would be an absolute disaster to them, and like going into the playoffs and losing again. So the easier schedule is significant. One thing that's brewing at Football Outsiders, a team that we have a really big projection on, it's not finished, so we have to like make sure that we check all the numbers. We have a big projection for the Minnesota Vikings, who also have a pretty easy schedule because they've got the Lions and the Bears, and they got, you know, they've got the second place version of that schedule. There's a scenario where the Vikings, who still have all their guys, even though they should be rebuilding, pass the Packers and win that division. And if that happens, I don't care about Rodgers' legacy. Green Bay, Tennessee fans, do you think you're up in arms right now about what I'm saying about Derrick Henry? Green Bay Packers fans are going to have pitchforks in the streets if the Packers finish below the Vikings.
Is part of that to due to the fact that they've got talent and now they have an offensive head coach that can actually maybe make Kirk Cousins a little bit better? Plus, it seemed like Zimmer's best talent was throwing people under the bus the last few years.
That's true. And they have the talent. It's pretty much the same dudes. You're right. It should freshen things up a little bit. The continuity matters a lot. They did add a few pieces. And part of it is, it's not just that the Packers lost Devontae Adams. It's that their receiving core consists of Watson, who, okay, he seems like a pretty good second-round pick, but he's not Burks, for example. Alan Lazard, Randall Cobb, Sammy Watkins, who was toast about 3 years ago, Juwan Winfrey. Who are these guys? Like, it's not like you know what, we got rid of Devontae Adams, but we, like, really addressed the receiver position in the offseason. It's all the guys we've watched Aaron Rodgers overthrow and shake his head at for the last 3 or 4 years. And then in the playoffs, they screw these guys. I'm not throwing them anymore. I'm going to throw to Devontae, and that's going to be it. That's their entire receiving core. It's very easy to look at that and say you're going to take one step backwards and the Vikings are going to stay the same and the Vikings end up on top.
Appreciate it, Mike. Always really good, man. You will take the slings. We know that.
So. Stay safe, man. Stay safe.
You guys went easy on me. You guys, I think deep down there's a little bit of recognition there that like things are about to get rough.
Thank you, Mike.
No, baby.
That's Mike Tenier.
Oh.
Interesting stuff. The thing on the 8-man box is it wasn't in the article.
Yeah.
We could talk a little bit about that on the other side. Now that we've sort of discussed this, we can get into that topic a little bit if you would like. We got Kayla Anderson in the fourth hour. We can finish the hour with this. We can talk about it to start. There were a couple of people calling during the conversation. If you want to call back, we can get to your phone call. 615-737-1045. We'll react to Tenier and talk about the article when we come back here on The Zone. Bullet with butterfly wings. That is either that concert in the fall, and we had tickets to see Pumpkins at the Ryman a few years ago. Got canceled because of COVID. Bridgestone, wrote same at the Ryman, but the voice on that tour, Corgan and Perry Farrell, on the same. Mom, this isn't something that's going to be as relevant to you. These are some voices that are, let's just say, polarizing.
You can take the next 60 seconds off, Mom. You don't have to worry about that.
I don't even know what you even say. Just the voices are polarizing.
Yeah.
Okay. That's going to be one where you're going to have a headache at the end of that show.
Is it that bad?
No, it's not bad. It's just they have voices that can be a little screechy.
Yeah, a little screechy.
A little higher pitched.
A little screechy
They're polarizing.
Dog.
Doesn't mean they're bad.
I like both of them, actually.
They're different.
But, yes.
You like them, but they're polarizing.
They're polarizing. Doesn't mean I don't like them.
Oh, okay.
It just means there's some people they don't get down with.
It's like me liking Lil Boosie. His voice is like that. Okay. All right. Touche.
That's why people like Jason. He's a little polarizing.
Yeah, that's right. Ray-Ban lenses. That's me. Cousin Danny in the borough. Danny, what's up?
What's up, Danny?
What up, fam? So I just wanted to talk a little bit about what Tenier had to say about Derrick Henry, because this is something that I've been saying since the divisional playoff game, is that he just didn't look like himself, and I don't care for the nuance of that discussion that he was coming off an injury. If you're out there playing, you're out there playing, right? Mm-hmm. Whether you're 100% or not, you're taking 100% of the criticism, right?
Right.
So I feel like, especially now that we've gotten through free agency, and we saw what happened with A.J. Brown and everything. I feel like when we really talk about A.J. Brown's success, a lot of what he did and a lot of his greatest successes as a receiver with this organization was when he was taking, you know, one-on-one coverage, cutting the top off of the defense when Derrick Henry was bringing 8 and 9 guys into the box, right?
Right.
A.J. Brown could win those one-on-ones, and Tannehill, for all of his faults, and there are many of them, he can throw a pretty daggum good deep ball. And A.J. won those one-on-one battles more often than not. Now, we have a less-than offensive line here in Nashville now, not as good as they were last year, and they weren't great last year. A.J. Brown, who could win those contested one-on-one catches, I don't know that anybody that they brought in that receiver has that same skill set coming off, you know, where they've been and out of college or what have you as draft picks. And I don't think that Derrick Henry is going to command that same amount of defensive respect in the box as he used to, right or wrong. I have a lot of questions as to whether the Titans' offense, which was the shining point of the team for the most part the past few years, is going to be able to hold a candle to what they have been. You just got to hope that Jeffrey Simmons and the defense can keep doing what they were doing last year, or the Titans are not going to hit the over on that 9.5 over-under win total, if you ask me. That's my two cents on it, guys.
Thanks, Danny.
That's fair.
Well, the defense knows. They've got to be A1.
Precious. Thick.
Especially in that AFC with a first-place schedule. The offense, I think the biggest thing, and you said it, Danny, and we talked about this on Friday, there's just a lot of question marks about this team. Mm. I think we were fairly optimistic when we looked at the schedule and went down with what we thought their record could be at the end of this. But that's also dependent upon questions being answered the right way. Mm-hmm. And we're kind of trying to feel glass half full about it.
Yeah.
But there's a lot that needs to be shown and a lot that needs to be seen.
Seen. Yeah.
Before we answered. Can really feel a certain type of way about this team.
Yeah. And of course, when you lose certain guys, specifically when you lose AJ, let's just get to it. And we also got to fight the fact that you're counting on Tannehill getting back to where You loved them in 19 and 20. Now, the point about this defense having to hold their own, it's a matter of time that, look, it can last for a year of it being very one-sided, but at some point, you need your partners to bring theirs to the party, too. Like, I can't continue to bring all this catering. Like, you got to bring me some cups, some plates, some utensils, and that's what they're looking for them as far as this team. You don't want it one-sided. Because then that eventually breaks and cracks.
Well, and it broke 2 years ago because the defense wasn't good enough.
There we go.
It broke last year because the offense wasn't quite good enough.
There we go.
If you could just find a way to take the 2020 offense, marry the 2021 defense to it, then my prediction last year, the Titans winning the Super Bowl, could actually come to fruition.
It's just so hard of a task, though, Jay. We can get more into it. Like, what would you rather have?
Great defense or great offense?
Or mediocre on both to play well.
It's a good question. So we will talk about that, plus Kayla Anderson in about 25 minutes here on 104.5 The Zone.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival. Featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.